For WXXI News, this is 1370 Connection. I'm Bob Smith, and Rochester is now in the midst of a dialogue about the issues of society, politics, and race. In a part, it's responding to a community call to action called Facing Race, Embracing Equity. And in part, it's inspired by the Rochester Museum and Science Center's about to open exhibit, Race, Are We So Different? That exhibit is opening in the next few days. With me this hour, WDKX Wake Up Club host Tariq Spence will join me as co-host this hour. And that exhibit we're going to be talking about as well with Rochester Museum and Science Center President and Chief Executive Kate Bennett. And Tariq, great to have you with us as the co-host chair. And Kate, great to have you with us as our guest today.
Happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
Okay, the obvious short answer to the question in the exhibit's title is no. Some people might say, hell no. But do people perceive it that crisply and bluntly? I'm just putting that out for whatever purpose. Is perception often getting pretty far afield from the reality of it? And I just wonder, Kate, first of all, let me ask you this. Have we got evidence that a lot of people don't see things as objectively as we'd like to see them? Is that going to be one of the issues that the exhibit's going to try to take on?
What's terrific about this exhibit is that it's got many different sections in it that allow you to learn how race has changed historically and how our perceptions of who we are has changed over time. And so there are these fascinating tidbits that has us looking at who we've been, who the census said someone was, 100 years ago or 200 years ago versus now. And little by little, you start realizing as you go through the exhibition that science is always changing and our perceptions are always changing. And probably with some information, we'll be able to change our minds about some of these things.
Well, it seems odd to talk about it in a way, though, in light of what we know historically and what we know scientifically, that we're all descended from the same group of people who decided to migrate out of East Africa, 150,000, 200,000 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we all came from. The same territory that President Obama's father was born in is where we all came from.
And where does the exhibit sort of start? Like, where does it start when I first walk in?
So when you first walk in, you see a picture of a diverse group of people on a bus.
Okay.
And start to see how we are shoulder to shoulder with people from all sorts of backgrounds in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly you go into a census area that gives you an opportunity to see that in 1790, a white man might have been called a free white man,
mm-hmm.
and today he would check off white. A black person might have been Negro at one point, and then black at another point in a census. Asian, all the variations in the way we have included categories on the census. So those are the first two areas of the exhibition.
In other words, a lot of it is self-perception?
Well, that's absolutely true about race. We all define ourselves. I am Welsh and Scottish, and I probably have many other things mixed in. But Welsh is where I sit when I talk about who I am.
That's interesting, because I think a lot of us would identify ourselves as American first, if anything. But then do we get sort of granular in that regard as American originally from whatever?
I think people have that experience. And I think ethnicity is very important to people. When you talk to people about how they celebrate a big occasion or a religious occasion, you know, the different ways that we celebrate are very culturally defined. And that's where our ethnicity comes in and our pride comes in. And it means that the way we grew up has a lot of things to do with how we associate with other people and whether we think we're the same or different.
That can mean so many different things depending on how do each of us, well, let's go around the table. How do each of us define ourselves? I'll just throw that out for whatever it's worth.
Well, as African American, I think it's interesting you say that because there'll be different times I'm around, different cultures, and it's so the celebration factor of, say, for a graduation. Let's just use that as a graduation in the African American culture is just as celebrated in the same way. Food, family, get together, everyone come together and enjoy each other. Same in the African American community, same in the Latin community. So I just find it so interesting that you said that the fact that the way we all sort of celebrate is the same just about every single culture. It's an once we achieve something, there's a birth in the family or a holiday tradition. We all have some sort of holiday tradition that different cultures. That's why this is so interesting is the fact that, you know, we may look different, but we kind of celebrate the same way.
Well, we have the same needs for celebration, mm-hmm. perhaps, and we all celebrate. But I think that what we serve at those celebrations is different.
Mm, yes.
And so that's what's great about this exhibit is that there are all these fascinating pieces of information. There are videotapes. There are opportunities to really delve into what are the differences in terms of how we're looking at each other and how it comes out in our society. For instance, there are disparities in education, in health. These things are displayed in the exhibition as well. You have an opportunity to sit at a cafeteria table and think about the differences for teenage kids in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the places where race is played out. You know, what's it like at your cafeteria? Mm-hmm. Where do the kids sit? What are the conversations they have?
Speaking of young kids, are they going to be exposed to this exhibit? Because I think that's very interesting, the fact that at what age do we start to say, okay, maybe I should hang at this table as opposed to this table? Is there a certain age where it happens, or does it change?
I think that where I noticed it with my daughter, who went through the city school districts, was when she was in the in high school is where the table started changing. Hmm. And it was a very mixed tables prior to that in the elementary schools. And I think that the initiative, what's terrific about what we're doing is that we have some very generous people at the Rochester Museum and Science Center who've made it possible for school kids to come to this exhibition. And we've targeted fifth grade on up as the age level to come enjoy it. And right now we have more than 4,700 school kids who will be coming to the exhibition. Mm-hmm. Some will be there on days that we've set aside where there will be conversations between urban and suburban or rural school classes. Mm-hmm. So it will be a really interesting way to have conversations, and people won't just be having it with people they know, mm-hmm. but people who are from different backgrounds.
That's something I've never heard of before, actually.
Well, we're going to have great facilitators help us get those conversations going.
That's good.
I wonder if people's perception of, first of all, what the term race means has changed a lot, and second of all, if it is more or less important than it may once have been. Or have we gotten to the point where you talk about the school cafeteria, it's more like, well, all the jocks sit together, all the intellectuals and are sitting together, all the kids from the drama club are sitting together, that kind of thing. They're busting up into interest groups instead of ethnic groups.
Well, certainly that happens, and we want more of that to happen in a way.
You know, I also find interesting what we find popular together. So sports, music, different things that sort of we don't realize we have a common interest in because there isn't that barrier that isn't broken. And I think with something like what you're talking about, where young kids from an urban background and young kids from a suburban background can sort of be in the same room and understand, hey, he likes the same things that I like or she likes the same things that I do. And find sort of that common bond, you start to realize that, while what I've seen and what I've heard, whether it's depicted on television or in movies, isn't exactly who I should, you know, not exactly who I should, you know, stereotype anymore. I should get to know the people who are in my community.
In a way, maybe, Tariq, your radio station is doing a lot in that area, because I read the rating books. Mm-hmm. I see that both city and suburb, you got more people between the ages of 12 and 34 filling out your call letters in the ratings than any other station in town. That's the role that, back in my time, stations like WBBF used to fulfill.
Yeah. And the most important thing that we try to do at DKX is understand that there are so many people that listen to our show within the city, outside of the city, online, and to understand that they have different perspectives on every single thing. That's why, you know, when we talk about race, which we do a lot on our show, we try to understand or get people to get it from a different perspective, and not come with the anger. I think the anger really doesn't help. But, you know, the emotion and the pride and the understanding of what different cultures have gone through and the way they've been treated will shed new light on this.
When I'm checking out the water cooler segment, I'm hearing concern. I'm not hearing rancor at all. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing worry.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm picking up.
Well, I think, you know, some of the issues that we're dealing with, we're kind of all worried about together when it comes to either gun control or, I mean, we all have sort of the same issues, but we think of them differently. What somebody is from the African-American community may have the top priority of keeping kids safe. You know, someone from the suburban or somebody from a different culture may be thinking about continuing the importance of education. So there are different issues, but they may rank differently.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we don't have the same interests, which is why I think The Water Cooler is a great show. And your show as well, Bob, is the fact that we kind of have the same interests and the same concerns, but they may be prioritized in different levels.
One of the wonderful things about the exhibition, the Rochester Area Community Foundation put an enormous amount of support behind the exhibition and the creation of conversations so that people really have an opportunity to get to know one another. Because we think that that's probably the best way we have to our future. We know that the kids will define the world differently as they grow up. And I think that we've got a lot of hope about change that we will see that will naturally come along as this generation grows up, because I think they have been in situations where their music and all the varieties of ways that they've enjoyed themselves are more similar than different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that through conversations, we will get more comfortable with one another and be able to have important conversations and loving conversations rather than angry conversations.
Yeah. Well, that may be, we've been heading that way ever since the mid-1950s, when Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry, James Brown, and Johnny Cash all ended up on the same top 40 chart in the same playlist. And now the playlists are merging again in a multi-ethnic stew.
Mm-hmm.
On your station, on your other main competitor, 98PXY. I mean, there's a lot more similarity than difference there, although the presentation's different, the emphasis may be a little different. There's a lot of common ground there, again.
Yeah, and I think that helps. I think that helps. But I think your point was very clear and it's very good, is that we get comfortable talking about it. I think there was this sort of, when I was a kid, sort of this uncomfortable feeling or sort of elephant in the room that doesn't help unless you really are having a dialogue about it. So if you don't have that dialogue, it's going to stay there and fester, and you get older and you kind of go through these whole emotions of why are, you know, in my case, African Americans treated this way, instead of just getting out and having the discussion more often. So I think that's a really key piece on not only how we relate to one another, but the being comfortable enough to bring this topic up, which has been taboo for a long time. That's why I admire the fact that there's an exhibit about it, because it's something a lot of people feel uncomfortable talking about.
Especially if they don't know their own heritage and they don't know their own history. And you know, back in the day, if you could see, for example, some of the things that people were saying about Irish Americans in the mid-19th century, just absolutely scurrilous and horrifying, some of the stuff that was coming around, the prejudices. And Martin Scorsese deals with that a little bit in Gangs of New York and some of the other films that were out there at the time. But there were successive generations of targets and scapegoats that went from Irish American, then to the people who were coming from Southern and Eastern Europe, and then religious minorities, then people from Africa, then people from Latin America. I mean, the beat goes on, and it makes you sad, and then it makes you realize, have we ever been able to get past this and just leave it aside?
Yeah.
Maybe we are. I don't know.
For the exhibit, though, you know, I know a lot of parents may be interested in either going with their kids you know, maybe having this discussion with them. What would you say to, you know, parents who know that their kids are either going on a field trip or maybe take them themselves beforehand and then afterhand as far as the dialogue goes?
I think it's really important to go to the exhibit with an open mind and enjoy yourself. There's a lot of – the wonderful thing about a museum exhibit experience is that you can go into it, whoever you are, and you're going to have an opportunity to have some experiences that may change some of your perceptions. So at whatever conversation you want to have, if you're interested in the sports area where we talk about in the exhibit, there's a mascot area, Native American issue. Mm. I'm not a mascot. So that's a very interesting area. If you're a sports fan, you've seen this issue played out in our society. So you get a chance to take a dive into that and look at that and learn if that's what interests you. So I think that what a parent should say is be open, have conversations, and learn what you can, because it's a big, wide world, and we'll all be better off in this community if we embrace diversity, because we will be a more interesting and a more creative place in the long run.
Interesting you mentioned that, of course, because I remember it being discussed just last month as we were heading into the playoffs, and the Washington Redskins mascot and even the team name became a subject of controversy once again. It kind of took some of the Washington Redskins players aback a little bit. They hadn't even thought about it before, and it sort of reduced Robert Griffin III to silence.
No.
Which is something that you don't usually do with him.
Yeah, he's very highly intelligent, usually has an answer. But this, can it lead to change? You know, here's something that has been ingrained and have been a part of this team and this culture for a long time. Can they change, and are they willing to change? Mm-hmm. And that's the ultimate sort of question behind it.
Yeah. You know, they've had that team name for 75 years. Yeah. Are they going to, and they've become known by it, but yeah, it is uncomfortable. It is absolutely uncomfortable to a lot of people. What are they going to do? The Cleveland Indians really have the same kind of issue right now. And
well, high schools all over our community have changed. I went to Penfield. We were the Chiefs. Now we're the Patriots. It was not such a difficult change, and it was an important one.
Exactly. Even if they're causing a little bit of kinship with a New England regional team, and not with the Buffalo Bills, but that's another story entirely. 263-WXXI is our number. We have Bonnie in Rochester on the line. And hi, Bonnie, you are on the air.
Yes, hi. I wanted to make a couple comments. I think the discussion so far about the exhibit, and I haven't been there yet, but I tend to go, and having dialogue is basically well-intended and I think good. However, my own experiences with the issue of race, and I've been concerned about this, involved with trying to get to a better place with it, both personally and collectively. I think what I'd love to see come out of this whole series is a plan that would not only continue this kind of approach, but have more specifics to it, such as, I was very fortunate in the mid-80s, there was a woman, I don't know if you know the name, McClurg Vivian, who was consulting with the Y, at that time also had a major program fighting racism, and she and her partner, they had several people, you know, who would go to groups, and I was involved with a labor union then, and we organized a group from our workplace to have her come, and over like, it was like a 3 or 4 month period, maybe once a week, that we had people from our, where we worked, representing different layers of the organization, white and black. And what was the purpose of this was to really get to some of the things about racism that aren't very easily talked about. For instance, it's not just about, you know, rubbing up against people in a sports event. It's not just about civil rights. It really is about what a lot of us have inside of us. So things like things like supremacy, white privilege, the details of some of the history that really still are very deep inside and don't come out because people feel very guilty about talking about them. So those are the kinds of things I think are where we are now and what needs to be done. And also with that, if they're not done, my experience is it's very hard to have any dialogue about race of any depth. You can have people sit down at a table and say, let's talk a little about, but people don't know what words to use. You have to have people who are trained and know how to do this so that they know the concepts to bring out. And this was an interactive process with this group. So there was some information sharing, but there's also interaction with each other. So for instance, one part of the process, midway, each of the white people there had to say, each of the black persons participating said, well, what is one thing you don't want white people to do anymore? And that's just one example. Mm-hmm. It was really wonderful. And if we could come at the end of this process, because I was at the meeting last week of the event, that was held to kind of launch some of this. If we could come out of this with recommendations such as that and using people who know how to do these things and make it part of the education process, make it part of the work process, employment process, and not just diversity, that doesn't go far enough. So I feel so strongly about this, and it's been one of the things that I've found really has made a difference in getting to a deeper dialogue, which is so much needed and needs people who know how to do that, not just people sitting down, or just not only that, I should say.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in and offering that. Appreciate the thought. I wonder, when we get down to that, we're going to find out that the things that really differentiate us, one or the other, are either individual personality differences or maybe where we grew up, sense of place. Are we different because we maybe grew up, say, in different parts of New York State? Because I have everybody around the table, I think, grew up somewhere different within New York State. Mm-hmm. Tariq, you're from downstate, right?
I am from New York City. I grew up in the Bronx.
Okay. So you're a downstater. Mm-hmm. I'm a Western New Yorker. Kate, you are from?
Penfield.
Okay. In a way, that's maybe the most salient difference we've got. Because the downstate experience, New York City experience, got to be significantly different from what it's like growing up here in Western New York.
I think that the caller made a really good point, and I'm glad she was at the launch event, the Facing Race, Embracing Equity initiative that surrounds the whole exhibition experience is created to cause conversations that get deep. And we are training facilitators. The National Building Coalition initiative is training a group of people who are going to work in the exhibition. And everybody who's being trained is promising to contribute 20 hours of volunteer time. Wow. As they visit. The Gandhi Institute is helping us train facilitators. So it's a very important part of this initiative that the Community Foundation is supporting, is to make sure that we are causing more of these conversations and that they get down into a deeper level. I was part of the biracial partnership program that Mayor Johnson created more than a decade ago. And that's where I met James Norman, and why I was so comfortable picking up the phone and calling him when we had the opportunity for the exhibition. We knew we could be a great community gathering place, but we couldn't do this whole project on our own. We needed a partner. I knew James well enough to pick up the phone and say, how about it? Mm.
And incidentally, he's going to be guest on this program a week from tomorrow, Thursday the 24th. I hope my memory of calendar is correct. He's going to be joining us on the 24th in the second hour. So look forward to that. We're going to talk about, obviously, economic and community development issues that he's working on right now. And so that's coming up. So in the meantime, though, I guess, you wonder how people perceive each other differently based on all the different experiences they've had. And what comes out so far in people who, regardless of any sort of visible superficial surface differences that you see, what comes out the most as people look at how they perceive each other and how they perceive people other than themselves? I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah, I guess it's a tough one to sort of understand and read. I think everybody's got a different approach on when they meet someone for the first time. I think there's a, you know, hearty handshake or eye contact, or whether or not that sort of feeling of, you know, are you welcoming or are you afraid? And I think for many years, you know, there have been times where I've walked up to individuals and for a moment they might have been afraid, but then realize, okay, I don't know why I reacted that way. There are others that I've walked up to and been friendly and almost engaging within that moment. And I think it just depends on, you know, maybe mood at the moment or if you're comfortable in that environment. But I think it's interesting to know what the facilitators, how do you make everyone feel comfortable? If I'm in a room and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm trying something different, I want to have this discussion, but I don't want to offend anyone. The role of facilitator is really that important, because you don't want someone to feel uncomfortable enough that they won't say what needs to be brought up in the discussion in order for us to understand one another.
Well, I think that any kind of conversation like this is like peeling an onion.
Yeah.
You start with a personal experience, and everybody has personal experiences to share. I had an experience in the Philippines when I was in college that had me understand what it's like to be despised because I was an American in an Asian country during the Vietnam War. So I had that experience, and I was able to contribute that to the conversation. And then somebody contributed something else and something else. And then as it goes around the table, there's another layer that comes out. Another question gets asked, and people can peel back.
263-WXXI, 263-9994. We got Paul in Rochester on the line. I'm Bob Smith with Tariq Spence, and we are talking this hour with Keith Bennett of the Rochester Museum and Science Center. And, Paul, you're on the air.
Your comment about where people grow up and or where they're from playing the influence, to me, it just hit it right on the money with me. I grew up in Ithaca in Canandaigua.
Mm-hmm.
And
Finger Lakes.
Finger Lakes. And I'll tell you, probably the most admired person was a black man, and he had he was like a playground director, and he had a wealth of talent and really good with children. And, you know, I was very young at the time. I was between 6 and 8 years of age, and you know, I thought in my own mind that, well, you know, everybody is like that. You know what I mean? And the comments about the Cleveland Indians and stuff like that. Well, when I was, you know, a kid, I always thought that being an Indian, when I seen it on television or in a movie, he was always the cool guy that had all the tricks to get everybody through the woods and everything like that. And I kind of held them values till I was like, you know, 20 or something like that. Then I got older and I realized, you know, there's good and bad and everything. But I think that is a major player in the perception of where you grow up and where you live. I've listened to other people on this radio station, some older African American people with very, very distorted opinions and examples of racism in the community. Whereas I actually think Rochester is a very good community as far as racism goes. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Of course it does. But what I mean is they perpetuate using 3 or 4 words in a sentence, and this happened to us and that happened to us. Well, you know what? It happened to everybody. You know, and they fail to realize that. And I think it just prolongs things when people don't discuss it. You know, and take the varied opinions of other people's backgrounds and what they had to offer.
In other words, just put it right out on the table for everybody to react to?
Yeah. I'll give you an example. the African-American woman stated that there was a lot of nepotism in getting jobs in a Rochester area. Well, I went to work at a major corporation, and there was a lot of nepotism. But I'll tell you what, it was spread out through every racial background there was. And to me, I enjoyed every one of them people, no matter what their background was.
Although in my uncle's time, I remember him saying that right after World War II, there were certain companies, and Taylor Instrument was one of them, where he said you couldn't rise to management ranks if you were Catholic. And he butted up against that wall and ended up going into the family business. Eastman Kodak was not that way. Xerox was not that way. They were open.
They were very much open as far as I remember. I mean, and like I say, I enjoyed the diversity and the knowledge that I got from them other people.
Now, Xerox was better and more open sooner in a lot of ways than Eastman Kodak was. And those who were around in the 1960s will probably remember the troubles that and the agitation that preceded the real opening up of Eastman Kodak to a broad range of diversity in the 1960s. Because until the 60s, it was tough to crack. It wasn't impossible.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, as life experience, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, the fact that sometimes the people your kids are around, or maybe you remember as a kid, I remember growing up in New York City in the Bronx, and I had more white teachers than I had black teachers. So my perception was a little bit different. Now, I did get taught the history through my grandmother, through my mother, of how long it took and the importance of education, and that's why they instilled it in me to go to school, to make sure you go to college, to, you know, respect others, to understand that you represent not only this family, but your community, your race, and so forth and so on. But I think the interesting part is that if his parents found out that he was around an African-American male and were totally adamant against it, he would have not gotten that experience. It shaped who he was because he was around a different culture. His parents were open to that. And I think some parents, most parents, I believe, go through that today. They're kind of like, I don't want my young, you know, daughter or son growing up thinking that this is the way it's going to be. Some have different views. Now, let's be honest, some of them have different views. But some of them need to understand that, you know, a lot of African-Americans who may be a little bit older or some that are younger feel as if there is a system that is against them. And it's really, you talked about the story in the Philippines. There's a feeling of that you don't want to ever feel less than. That's a terrible, terrible feeling. You ask any woman that's gone through it, any person of color, anybody who's felt as if they want to put you in a box and leave you there.
Mm-hmm.
And for African Americans, for a long time, they felt that way and still do to a certain extent. But that feeling that you had of you cannot participate, or this is the way I see you, it's not a very good feeling. And I think for a long time, we haven't had that discussion. And that's where some of the animosity comes from African-Americans. And unless you've gone through it, you may not understand it completely. But at some point in history, that's the whole point of this, that we have gone through it, whether you were Catholic or Italian from Ireland or wherever you came from. At some point, you've sort of felt it. But, you know, through different generations who have grown up here for a while, some of that has gone and some of it still sticks around. So I think that's what makes the exhibit so interesting, to have everyone that's basically had some sort of culture or history go through something like this.
263-WXXI, Pete in the city on the line right now. Hi, Pete. You're on the air as we continue our conversation. I'm Bob Smith with Tariq Spence, and our guest this hour is Rochester Museum and Science Center President and Chief Executive Kate Bennett. And Pete, you're on the air.
Thanks for having me on. I was once traveling in Hawaii, and I'd never been to Hawaii before. And, you know, we were talking about different perspectives from where you grow up. And what I didn't realize when I went there was that the local population doesn't consider themselves Americans. They're part of the United States, but they're Polynesian. And I was listening to someone talk, and, you know, from my background, when you listen to someone talk, you look them in the eye, you pay them full attention, and his reaction was to think that I was giving him stink eye, which is, you know, the big no-no that I had no idea about. This was one of the biggest insults, and all I was doing was looking at his eyes for too long, and it almost got me beat up.
Whereas that same gesture is a mark of respect.
Yeah,
here.
Well, that's where I was coming from. I had to, you know, explain it to him. Luckily, I had a friend that intervened and said, hey, he doesn't even know what stink eye is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's a very common training that corporations do when people are going over to Asia, is to make sure you understand the cultural differences and how we look. You know, in Japan, you don't look people straight in the eye in the same way. And it is important to understand that. And those are, again, cultural differences.
Yeah, but we have to be willing to be comfortable with ourselves enough to have that discussion, because there are people out there that will hear that for the first time and not know that. And kind of feel bad that they don't know that. Like, they kind of, I'm hearing this for the first time. I should have known that. Oh. I've been on this planet long enough. But that's the whole point, I think, of the exhibit, is the fact that, okay, maybe you are in your 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s and didn't know that. That means that we have a lot to learn about each other.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes embarrassment gets in the way of our education, and it's just best to leave that aside.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not a bad idea, I guess, to clue yourself in on all these things, because they can matter. Even if you don't know it, they can matter.
Those
of us, I mean, here we are. We've kind of lived our entire lives somewhere in the northeastern United States in a pretty circumscribed area of a few hundred miles. And yeah, as a result of that, there are things we know, but there are a lot of things we don't know.
And the embarrassing question, too. I think we have to be sort of brave enough to ask that embarrassing question. I mean, you know, teachers say there's no dumb question. You have to get it out so that you can get the answer that you need. Because if you're going to go through, well, I won't ask that question because I don't want to offend anybody. You're never going to get the answer you want. If you want the answer truly, you go to someone you respect. You go to somebody that you know, and you ask them honestly, and, you know, accept the answer that they give you.
Because the only stupid question is the one you didn't ask.
Yeah, if you don't ask, you'll never know.
Yeah.
And even from, you know, neighborhood to neighborhood, there are very subtle traditions that people are steeped in from birth. And, you know, there's no way to know what one culture is doing in their every single day-to-day action, and what language is being used and what actions are being used. And you know, it's almost like tripwires are there to trip people up that they weren't even aware were there ever, you know.
Wow. That just reminds me, you find that out very quickly. If you just go to Buffalo, which is a city, unlike Rochester, which is even more a city where individual neighborhoods have very strong ethnic identities and a lot of ethnic, I won't say insularity, but I'll call it cohesion, I think, for lack of a better term, where a lot of people still congregate together. They have their favorite stores, their favorite restaurants, their community cultural institutions, and the rest. To a greater degree, I think, than we do in Rochester, where we tend to mix around and diversify our residential choices more than they do there. And you learn a lot of things about just those very tripwires that you're talking about. Go to Buffalo sometimes, and you learn just how different people could be, their outlooks.
Yeah. I think we've always had, you know, sort of different points of view on life and in history. But the interesting thing about it is that, especially in Rochester, the history here has so much to do with, you know, the rights for women, for African Americans, there's so much history here that you can sort of tap into to get that discussion going.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got to use sort of the resources that are around.
Sure.
If you're willing to take that leap of faith and have that discussion about race, because it makes people really uncomfortable to talk about it. Some people would rather talk about religion or politics before they get to race, which is why it's interesting.
Well, yeah, but let's face it. Our two biggest local heroes are people who talked about the barriers set up by race and gender and trying to bust them down. They're our local heroes. We named a bridge after them.
Mm. My mother's a big historian, and she had to go to Susan B. Anthony House. And I found it quite interesting when we were there how much they talked about the relationship between Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony and this sort of friendship and bond that they had way back, where if two people of different races and different sexes were together, would cause a problem. Yet these were, you know, an African-American man and a white woman almost working together to achieve similar goals. So it's just an interesting story that sort of revolves around race.
We're hoping that people will also visit our Underground Railroad exhibition when they're at the museum, as well as our Native American exhibits, because you'll get a little more of that background of the story. The Erie Canal caused this area to be a great mixing pot and a great boomtown.
Hey, Du, thank you for checking in at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm Bob Smith with Tariq Spence. And our guest this hour is Rochester Museum and Science Center President Kate Bennett. And, of course, the exhibit at which we're discussing right now is the about-to-open exhibit at the Rochester Museum, Race, Are We So Different? We talk about the ways in which we answer that question, or however we answer that question, and the ways in which we're invited to think about that question in all of its various dimensions right now. We'll be getting back to the phones in just a second at 263-WXXI. But will we be asked in a way to step back and see how it all works in a social context and how we form our opinions and how we form what we think we know? Not going to say what we actually know, but I mean what we think we know, our perceptions, however distorted they are.
Well, there certainly is quite a bit of cultural anthropology in the exhibition that will give you an opportunity to take a look at that. Yet the emphasis of what we're doing here is because of our great media partners. WXXI is one of them. The Democrat and Chronicle is another. We will have the opportunity to have discussions through the media that will extend these conversations about what way do we want this community to be in the future. We know we've learned a lot about who we are, what are our educational levels, what are the health levels. We want to make sure that when this exhibition leaves, we put a stake in the ground and say, this is where we are now. What's our goal for the future? And I think that's really the most important conversation that we can possibly have, is to make sure that we understand that we really do demand that every third grader read. You know, those kinds of things are going to make a bigger difference to our economy, to the way we live and work and play together than almost anything else.
From your mouth to God's ears, that we'll have more kids more aware and more inquisitive about things. I mean, that's an obviously easily achievable ambition. We're looking at it again as well in the context of recent history, when we found, on the one hand, that our political system, our elective politics, have opened up wide and created possibilities that we never thought would open up before. Although Dr. King did make a prediction. In 1965 or 6, he said, I believe we're going to elect our first African-American president early in the 21st century. Hmm. And he was right on time.
Yeah.
He was absolutely right. This is exactly what we did. I guess at the same time, though, the president has said on numerous occasions that he wants to try to take the country beyond these divisions, beyond partisanship, beyond race, beyond ethnicity, and beyond culture, and create a new political culture of pragmatism and practical solutions to problems on which we all can work together. In the end, are we going to be judged on the degree to which we actually succeeded doing that and getting beyond those things?
That's going to be hard. Because I don't think anybody's ever done it before.
As we're fighting out right now, unfortunately.
But this is when you set high goals and, the president, you remember, I think it was here, at XXI when so the President Obama, it may have been just before that, when he was elected, and there was this feeling of, okay, I think we need this. I think we can head in this right direction. And of course, there's a lot of fallout from that, from the job that he's done, and a number of different people's opinions. But I think for a while there was a moment in America, like, did we just go somewhere that we've never gone before in electing an African American president? How many people would honestly say that we thought we'd see this? I thought I'd be a granddad before that happened, but it did happen, and it did show that we're moving in the direction, but we still have a lot to work on. And I think a lot of it's personal, Bob. I think a lot of it's the conversations that maybe your mom and dad wouldn't have had before that you're willing to have. Maybe it's the sit down and talk to your son or daughter that you wish that your parents had with you. Maybe that's the next generation. That's why it's so important to see that so many young people are going to be exposed to this, because this may be in some households that first discussion about race, and who knows where they will take it when they're old enough to have that discussion. And so this is the type of dialogue that needs to take place in order for us to go to that, that mythical world that President Obama is talking about,
right,
which can be achievable if we are all willing to say, okay, let's go to the table and have this discussion.
The American Anthropological Association is the organization that created this exhibition, and they worked with a science museum in Minnesota to bring this to fruition. And it's been terrific that so many of the places it has gone around the country, it's been traveling for more than 5 years, and there are several, there's a couple different copies of the exhibition. Each community that has done it has seen change. Mm-hmm. Some communities have changed farther than others, and it's terrific, because we science museums know that using ideas and getting people together and being a community gathering place really helps people move on to the next stage. So we're excited to be the place.
It's interesting in another way, too. I mean, on a personal level, the president is a man who is essentially a very practical, pragmatic man in his outlook and his philosophy. And he's not an ideologue in any sense of the word, which is interesting in a way, because the last guy who we could have described in that context was Jack Kennedy back in 1960. He's a lot like Jack Kennedy. And he's in a situation where he's trying to get everybody to say, forget about ideology, forget about stereotype, we got problems, let's just roll up our sleeves and get down to business. Question is then, are there things that are getting in the way of us being able to do precisely that? Just be practical, pragmatic, get down to business, and get the job done.
Well, I think a lot of our problems are all the same. I think, job growth, whether it's the city of Rochester or other areas, the importance of education, I think they're all sort of the same. But, we're not willing to get in the same room and talk a bit about what's going on. A dad, like myself, and someone who's listening to this show, or as a friend who's thinking about the same thing. How am I going to get my kids from this grade to the next grade? How do I get them from grade school to high school? How do I get them from high school to college? And how do I stop worrying about them after college? I mean, every dad in every race is thinking the same thing. But we don't even get to that level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the interesting thing about that, is that that's the common bond. That's the common bond of, my daughter was sick not too long ago, and we had to go to the hospital. And we were in the hospital, and one thing about, the children's hospital is that you have two beds, and you have two parents sort of sitting there with their kid, and you have this sort of common bond. It's a sad one, because one kid is sick and the other one is sick, and thank goodness neither one of our kids were severely sick. It was a stomach bug, and it was the croup cough. And, totally different backgrounds, had on sort of his sort of hunting gear, hat. And him and I had this conversation back and forth about being dads. And I think I got something out of it from him, and he got something out of it from me. And unfortunately, it was that moment that brought us together. But with this exhibit, it does something similar. It doesn't take a tragedy for it to happen. It doesn't take a sports event. It doesn't take a music. It doesn't take whatever. It takes that moment where I see you as a dad and you see me as a dad. Or mm-hmm. I see you as a man and you see me as a man. Or I see you as a woman and you see me as a woman. Whatever it is. And then you start and build from there. Mm-hmm. And once you start and build from there, you start to realize that we're not so different, that we have some of the same ideals.
So is that going to be the takeaway, Kate, that you're hoping we'll get from it, is to understand the similarity and the essential identity of who we are?
You know, museum exhibits are wonderfully creative kinds of experiences, and you have 100 people in that exhibit and you'll have 100 different ideas coming out of that. And so I'm hoping that everybody will come out talking about it and that everybody will really think about, how can I expand my friendship group so I include people from different races so that I am more comfortable around all the time. You know, let's take the experience of this exhibit beyond.
So let's basically see who we really are and then realize that we don't have differences that make a difference.
And be willing to say, why do I think this way? And is it right or is it wrong?
Yeah.
And where did we get it from?
Yeah. No, got to recognize that as well.
Exactly. So we're going to have to go through a little bit of history as well as a little bit of reality there. And hopefully we'll come out on the other side a little bit more knowledgeable about each other.
So I'd also like to thank ESL, Federal Credit Union. They've done a wonderful job supporting us as well.
And I want to say, first of all, thanks to all of you for listening and taking part this hour of 1370 Connection. Our thanks to our co-host, Eric Spence, host of the WDKX Wake Up Club, who will be joining me again for several more broadcasts in this series. Eric, look forward to working with you again.
We'll talk to you soon.
And our thanks to our guest of this hour, Kate Bennett, who is president of the Rochester Museum and Science Center. Our thanks to all of you for being with us here at WXXI AM and FM HD2 Rochester. For Dave Campbell, our technical director, and for the WXXI TV crew, I'm Bob Smith. It's been a pleasure.